sports, entertainment, and Maine's best guest list on The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Hello there, and a very good Sunday morning to you on this fifth day of November. It is the best of Downtown. Rich Kimball and Carrie Haskell here. Our look back at some of our favorite conversations from the previous week, brought to you as always by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Guests of the program will come your way on the G&M Family Market phone line. G&M is right there on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden, and they're open 7 days a week from 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. On the program this morning, our conversation with actor Bryan Cranston. His new film, Last Flag Flying, opens this weekend at selected theaters around the nation. He's also getting ready to appear on the London stage. We'll talk with him about that and more later on this hour. Gary Tanguay of NBC Sports Boston checks in as well. But we get things rolling with our conversation with our friend Bill Green from a news center, Bill Green's Maine, who, well, like a lot of folks, when we caught up with him earlier this week, was dealing with a power outage. What are you doing today, Bill?
Well, I was working, but I had to come home because my generator's gone off.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to be working with that. Even when I have it, I don't have water. Or I don't have enough. You know, one of those deals, we're like Apollo 13 here. We're trying to harness our, you know, limited electricity to get back to Earth. And so we've had light, but we don't have running water, which is a problem. We have heat. Stuff like that. So I'm cooking outside on a Coleman stove. I'm making some coffee as we speak.
This has been a surprisingly difficult storm for people. A lot of estimates that more people were without power than during the ice storm from 20 years ago. And I guess the one saving grace is that it's not 5 degrees below zero.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And it's surprising that it's taken so long for everybody to get power back. A pole snapped in front of my house at 5 o'clock Sunday morning. I heard it Monday morning. And there's a crew from Kentucky out there now. They've put in a new pole, and they're under the direction of a Maine guy. So I've got the scoop of what's happening on Valhalla Road in Cumberland, and I'm thinking maybe another day, and I'll be back.
Yeah, well, we wish you luck in that. Now, does that mean you haven't had a chance to watch the last couple of games of the World Series?
That is correct.
That's too bad because I know you're a baseball guy. It's been some pretty good baseball.
Yeah. They get so pumped up for postseason baseball. I think we who, you know, hang around amateur baseball, we have so many fewer games that we play them at a higher emotional level. And sometimes we can't understand why the major leaguers aren't fired up like we are. But when it gets to this point, they're fired up and they play some great baseball. And I am disappointed that I missed it.
What do you think about this new Red Sox manager hiring Alex Cora? Do you think that was the right move?
I don't know. I like guys like Girardi and, Gary DeSarcina.
Mm.
And who's the guy that was there and left and went to Arizona?
Oh, Torrey Lovello.
Lovello. And do you know that his father was the executive producer of Hee-Haw?
I did not know that. That's awesome.
He has an interview. He's an old man, Richie. Apparently likes to talk baseball. And he played at UCLA and got involved in TV in L.A. and started doing Hee Haw, knew they couldn't afford to do it in L.A., so moved it to Nashville. Was the first one to move a show out of Hollywood or whatever, went to Nashville. And so Torrey Lovello, you know, grew up among all those Daisy Mays who are probably he considers like his aunt. And I'd love to meet him and talk to him about being the son of the producer of
Hee-Haw. Wow, that's a great story. I had no idea. And too bad to see...
That's up your alley, right?
It is, absolutely. Too bad to see... he's going to do great wherever he is, but I hate to see Brian Butterfield leave the Red Sox, even though it sounds like a good opportunity with the Cubs.
I know, and I hate the Cubs. I want them to lose. I've always wanted them to lose. I especially want them to lose until Brian went out there. So, you know, it's going to be tough on me, but I guess I'll probably... You know, it's funny, the first time I saw Billy Swift pitch at Fenway, I was wondering, you know, what's this going to be like to know somebody on the other team? And I was cheering like heck for the Seattle Mariners instantly, you know? So I'm sure with Butter down there, I'll be cheering for the Cubs, I guess.
Now, why don't you like the Cubs, Bill?
I don't know. I've never liked them. I think they make good losers. Why ruin a good story? You know, they haven't won in 100 years. Why not go 200 years? It's a better story. I don't like Theo. I think Rich, among the people listening to your show, there are at least 500 who, given $200 million, could build a good Major League Baseball team. And I just, when I've been around Theo and watched him, he kind of acts like he's superior. And, you know, he wears great clothes and kind of looks at the game like he sees things that we don't. And I just think that we all see the game. And you know, I mean, you know, he carried the bag in high school. And I just, I don't know. I just don't like the guy.
Well,
you know, but he's built two World Series champions. He's going to Hall of Fame. I'm standing on my deck with no power.
You're a Hall of, but you're a Hall of Famer too.
Well, yeah, but not exactly the same one.
We're talking to Bill Green. Well, Bill, a big night is coming up on November 9th, sponsored by the Maine Folklife Center. This will be at the Minsky Recital Hall. Now, when you're growing up on the east side of Bangor, Maine, if anybody had told you at some point you would be performing in a recital hall, would you have believed them?
Well, Rich, for Bangorians, I took voice from Mr. Cup on, was it Essex Street?
Yes, it was. Yes,
I was a fine young singer who drank 50,000 cups of coffee and ended up with this voice like I've got now. But no, and like even when I was at Maine, I never thought that I would ever do anything to be honored by the university. You know, they were just making sure I got my tuition in before they handed me I want you to hear my water boiling outside here.
Mm.
You know, they just, you know, I just barely got through there. I kind of had to work my way through. I had to fight my way through and, you know, battle, you know, between work and academics. And, geez, you know, this is amazing.
Yeah, you'll be presented with a great award that night. And then you're also going to be speaking. And your address is entitled, Kids, Don't Take My Advice, 45 Years of Bragging About Maine.
Well, that's kind of true. It's the Folklore Center. They're going to be doing a thing about Maine storytellers. I know that Dave Mallett's up after me here in another month or two. They'll have an evening with David. And this kicks off a series that the Folklife Center is doing. When I was at Maine looking for the easiest way through, I said, well, I'll take folklore. Because, you know, what could be easier than that, right? And I had a guy named Sandy Ives.
Oh, yes.
Who was, you know, kind of an eccentric guitar playing, singing, talented PhD, and I went to school with his son, and you know what? It was a hard course, but I took up, you know, 6 hours of folklore, and I did enjoy a great deal some of the stories he'd collected around Maine. There's a guy down in Jonesport Beals named Barney Beal, and, you know, some of those stories that we've heard of, the foot on the rock in Bucksport, the, you know, the truth behind it, and all those stories did resonate with me, and it I've always kind of enjoyed being a feature storytelling guy. And so I was delighted when they called me up and said, hey, you want to do something?
And we're also going to be having a discussion with Brian Naylor of National Public Radio, who is also a UMaine grad.
Yeah, Brian and I were there at the same time. I assume he graduated in 76. He was a better student, kind of a quieter guy than I was. But we did link up, and I think it was called Advanced Television Production. I think I took 6 hours of that. And I was already working at Channel 2 and had been there 2 or 3 years by then. And so I knew how to direct a simple show and run camera and do rudimentary lighting. And so Brian, who was, I thought, maybe the outstanding student in that program, and I would usually link up in these production projects that you had to do. Every couple of weeks, your turn would come up. And he would usually use me as a director. I believe he always did. And I always used him as a talent or something because, you know, he was very good. And I think at that point I was pretty good at compared to kids who were just learning to run camera and stuff. And we would do our projects very quickly. And I think got pretty good grades. I'm really flattered that he would come up because he's been the like White House correspondent, the Washington bureau chief for NPR for a long, long time. I've heard him on NPR for 25 years reporting on the very biggest stories in the country. So I'm very flattered that he would come up.
Well, it's a well-deserved honor, and I've told you this before, and you're always very humble about it, but you've done such a service to the people of Maine by sharing these stories, and many of them little-known stories through the years on Bill Green's Maine. I've stolen countless stories from you to use in my Maine studies classes, my U.S. history classes through the years, and you've just helped to expand our knowledge so much of this state.
Thank you, Rich. And, you know, we're doing something that I think is interesting. Because guys like Cliff Reynolds and Andy Driscoll, you can't find much stuff of their stuff. I actually asked that we get an archivist and he's a graduate student from Westbrook at Simmons College, and he's archiving all my shows, and we'll have them online first on our website and then at Maine Library, so they won't be lost. And I'm excited about that maybe some social studies teacher will, you know, pull out a story about, you know, you name it, you know, I can't think of anybody, John H. Reed. I almost said Roger Reed. I haven't had a story of Roger Reed. John H. Reed and play it to some junior high kids, and maybe they'll get some perspective on what it was like way back in 2010.
I still use it. It's so old, it's a VCR copy of the special you did many years ago, Maine, The Shape We're In.
Oh, my goodness, Rich. You know, it's... Can I tell you 35 seconds? I don't want to go over my time.
You have no time limit. You're Bill Green, damn it.
So I did that show linearly, as you will laugh at the next time you watch it. And then I watched the first segment, and I realized, oh, my goodness, I left a part out. So I had to go back and attach 47 seconds on the front of it. So when you listen to the first 47 seconds, it's like, in 1817, some good, you know, there were some green sprig boys captured at English camp. You know, and you listen, I'm talking like an auctioneer for 45 seconds. And then some music comes up and it slows down. But now we could, of course, just slide the timeline to the right and insert 45 seconds. But back then, you started with the first word and you ended with the last word. And I'm impressed that you have that.
Hey, so you were talking about singing, and it reminded me of a story, and I don't know that I've ever told you this before. When I was in high school, I auditioned for a play, and Jim Pike was the director, and he cast me in this play, and he explained that it was quite a big singing part, and I had said to him, you know, I can't sing. And he said, oh, everyone can sing. And so when I got cast, he said, sing Happy Birthday. And as I started to sing Happy Birthday, the blood drained from his face. And he got very scared. And he said, every afternoon, you're going to come in before rehearsal, and you're going to work with this young woman, and you're going to learn to find your pitch, and she's going to teach you to sing enough so I can actually work with you. And that person was your sister, your little sister, Marcia.
Oh, my goodness. We grew up in my family... Rich, Marcia and Julie both play the piano pretty well, and we were all singers. My mother loved to sing, and we would have family sings standing around the piano on Parkview Avenue, banging out Kick-Kick-Katie and Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree with Anyone Else But Me. I know all the World War I and World War II stuff, and so we actually are a pretty musical family, and I'll give you one more. I went to the symphony last week and heard a piece that's now 17 years old called The Masked Man. And it's like the greatest piece of symphonic music I've ever heard. It's full chorale and symphony, and it's been on the bestseller list. So I want all your sports fans out there to go out and listen to a new piece of music, 17 years old, and I think it's going to rival like Handel's Messiah. It's called the Marked Man. It's unbelievable.
Well, it sounds fantastic. Well, hey, Bill, it's always a treat. We appreciate you, especially under these somewhat trying conditions with no power, to come on with us this afternoon. Congratulations on this very well-deserved honor. November 9th up at the Minsky Recital Hall, Bill will be honored as a distinguished alumni of the University of Maine. Brian Naylor from NPR there to host, and Bill will talk about his adventures over 45 stellar careers in television, years in television. Bill, thanks as always for being with us.
My pleasure. It's good to be with you.
It's Bill Green, Bill Green's Maine, WCSH and WLBZ-TV. When we come back, we'll talk a little sports Boston style with Gary Tanguay of NBC Sports Boston. It's The Pulse, AM 620 WZON.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free Maine State inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Biking season is here, and the only way to be sure that you're road or trail ready is to bring your bike to Slipping Gears Cycling, Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. At 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, before prime riding season slips away. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, Bangor's best full-service bike shop. Outstanding service, huge stock. Like them on Facebook for updates, shop in person and online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
We're back on the Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning, brought to you by Quirk Auto Group, quirkauto.com. It's your car. Find it at Quirk. Speaking of 60s music, 60s hitmaker, Peter Noon, Herman of Herman's Hermits, joins us on Tuesday's Downtown program. Tomorrow on the show, our friend Stephen Tobolowski helps us beat the drum for his appearance here, Carrie, now less than 2 weeks away. An evening with Stephen Tobolowski, November 15th, over at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. And for anybody who just knows him from the movies, I think they'll be surprised to see a different side of Stephen Tobolowski when he appears in Brewer.
Yeah, the writer, the storyteller, he has led a very interesting life off screen, and his stories reflect that.
And his book, My Adventures with God, is it's a bit of a memoir, but also a tale of his return to his faith, and there's that part of it, but it's a very funny book, but also a very thought-provoking book as well. It's going to be a terrific event. Tickets are available at the Briar Patch on Central Street in downtown Bangor while they last. And then here's the deal. We love this part. They're $30, which is a heck of a good price in and of itself. But you also get a copy of Stephen's book, My Adventures with God, as part of your ticket price. And I'm pretty sure he's going to stay around post-show and sign some of those books as well. So $30 gets you in the door and gets you a copy of the book. Get your tickets now at the Briar Patch, Central Street, downtown Bangor, an evening with Stephen Tobolowski. That's Wednesday, November 15th at the Brewer Performing Arts Center. All proceeds will benefit Congregation Beth El. Up next on Downtown, time to talk some Boston sports. And to do that, we checked in on Thursday's show with our friend Gary Tangway of NBC Sports Boston. Let's start with a little football this afternoon and we'll cut right to the chase. Did Belichick screw up on this whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing?
Yeah, but I would have done the same thing. He rolled the dice. He tried to make it work. And everyone knows that you need a quarterback to win in this league. And he felt that he had his next quarterback. Unfortunately, Brady was, you know, a zombie from The Walking Dead and wasn't going anywhere. And his football life has gone on much longer than any of us anticipated. And so he had to make a move. But I would have done the same thing. I also feel that Bill was really trying to get an extension to Jimmy. And you know, Mike Giardi said on our show the other night that the reality kind of hit Jimmy during training camp that it's never going to happen here. He just saw how well Brady had been playing. He saw him, you know, doing his crazy exercises with his rubber bands after two-a-days. And Garoppolo just, it kind of just really hit him for the first time where it's I'm never going to play here. You know, he's, and he, I guess he talked to his agent. He's like, you know, we got to go. So they were going. You know, now the question is, you know, should he have waited until the offseason and had Jimmy as a backup for 8 more games and traded him before? You know, Bert Breer says there's a 2-week window where they could have dealt him and not impacted the salary cap regarding the franchise tag or not franchise, you know, non-franchise tag, whatever. So you wonder, you know, would you be better off with Jimmy Garoppolo for 8 more games as a backup, and then you trade him in the offseason? That's my only question. Why did Bill all of a sudden just say, you know, now? But I'm not one of those guys that's going to sit here and say they should have traded him for the Browns in the spring or now. I mean, you need a quarterback, and if he'd been able to pull it off, he possibly would have had another quarterback for another 10 years after Brady. And a lot of teams just can't do it, you know? So I don't begrudge Bill. He miscalculated. It didn't work. He went for it, and it didn't go.
So,
but I don't blame him for going for it.
What do they do going forward? Obviously, Hoyer knows the system. There are guys in the league that are far worse than Brian Hoyer. Do they look for a quarterback in next year's draft?
I think so. I'm sure they'll be looking big time. You know, and they'll just – the thing about Garoppolo is all of the guys were in love with him because they felt that he had the mindset and he could be in a pro offense. You know, when you deal with a lot of these great college players, these great college quarterbacks, you know, will they have the ability to be in the mental capacity to be a pro quarterback? You know, look at even Andrew Luck. I mean, this guy was supposed to be a can't-miss kid, make you forget about Peyton Manning, and he hasn't had he talk about Luck, he hasn't had any. So, you know, for Belichick, you could tell when Bill talked about trading Jimmy, he was like his dog died. He knew he had to let one go. You know?
Celtics
so it's gonna be hard. They'll draft one, but it's gonna be hard to find another guy.
Oh, yeah.
They don't come along every day.
No, not like that. Celtics won their 6th in a row last night. Is Brad Stevens an even better coach than we thought he was?
Yeah, he is. I mean, did you see after the game Monday? After they beat San Antonio, and you know, San Antonio didn't have Kawhi Leonard, so that's fair, but. You know, Pop was just patting the guy on the back and shook hands with him and talking to him. And Popovich, you know, just praises this guy. Jim Boeheim said he's the greatest coach in America. Great, you know. And look, they're playing defense. People said Kyrie Irving wouldn't play defense. He's playing defense. They're a great defensive team, and they're fun. They're so much fun. Yeah, he's a great coach. He's the best. He is. He's the Belichick of basketball, as far as I'm concerned.
So how good can this team be even without Gordon Hayward?
Better than I thought. I felt with Gordon that they could make a run and possibly get into the NBA Finals. Without Gordon, I didn't think that would be possible. But Al Horford has improved, and he's playing better than he did last year. Tatum doesn't play like a rookie. Jaylen Brown obviously has improved a lot. So I figured that they'd be an okay playoff team without Gordon. Now I'm thinking, and the way Cleveland is imploding, they're just a mess, that this team might be able to win the Eastern Conference Finals and get in the championship. Now, once you get into the championship, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go there. But, you know, when you put Kyrie Irving, if you put Baines in the middle who, you know, rattle some heads, you put Kyrie Irving and Jaylen and Tatum and Horford all on the floor, you know, other than LeBron, who's better in the East? There's no one.
No.
There's no. I mean, the East isn't that great. I mean, obviously, if they were in the Western Conference, it'd be a different story. But don't tell me Toronto. Don't tell me Washington. You know, it's just, you know, can those four defeat LeBron? That's really, I think, what it's going to come down to. And I think they can, man. I think LeBron is going to be exhausted by the end of the year.
We're talking to Gary Tanguay here on Downtown. We haven't chatted with you since the Red Sox found themselves a new manager. Is Cora the right guy for that job?
Yeah, I mean, he's as good as anybody. You know, he'll be a player's manager. He obviously comes with a lot of credibility, bench coach for a World Series championship team. A lot of people respect him. He's been a broadcaster. He's worked in the front office. He's managed in, you know, some winter league ball. And I think so. I mean, who... You know, it's you know as well as I do, man. It still comes down to the players. And I think he'll do a good job keeping the clubhouse together. But, you know, can David Price pitch in the postseason? can fail pitch in the postseason, and you know, will these young guys pick it up? I don't think that Cora can have any impact on that. But hopefully he's got to make the clubhouse a happier place. I mean, just what a miserable sanctum that clubhouse was. I mean, it was just brutal. He's got to make it a better place for guys to come to work.
Does he have to?
He can do that.
Does he have to go in there too at some point and have a little heart to heart with David Price?
I don't know if you can. I'm just so down on that guy. He's just a nut job, you know. Okay, big deal. He pitched in relief in the playoffs, but you know, he's just a guy that cannot look in the mirror. He cannot look in the mirror. I mean, what kind of person goes after Eckersley like that? So I don't know, Rich. I don't know if that guy can be spoken to. I mean, I know Farrell was afraid of him for some reason, you know. But, I mean, you just want to talk about the bully at the end of the block. That's Price. I just have no use for him. So I don't know. I mean, I hope he's going to have to. He's going to have to.
They brought in Tony La Russa to be a senior advisor to Dave Dombrowski. They go back a while.
Sure.
What's his role going to be, and why La Russa other than the friendship?
Play cribbage with Dombrowski at lunch. I mean, Rich, you know how this stuff works. It's a good old boy network. I mean, La Russa's 73. I mean, wasn't he with Arizona? Wasn't he with a bunch of teams? You know, what do they do? It's a good old boy network. I don't know if he's going to. Somebody said that, you know, La Russa could help Cora because of his managing experience. I suppose. You know, but it is what it is. Bring in my buddy. Have him talk to Cora a couple times during the year. Haven't got on a spring training. I mean, you know, La Russa obviously is a great manager. But that's probably the idea.
I'm not impressed. I'm not a big Tony La Russa fan. I was a good manager, but some of his comments in the last year or so, you know, in the Adam Jones situation, the Kaepernick thing, he feels a little tone deaf to me.
Yeah, well, that's true, you know. But you know something? The Red Sox sometimes are a little tone deaf with what's going on.
True.
I mean, look at what did Bill James tweet the other day trying to defend Kevin Spacey? I mean, you know.
Oh, dear.
You know, Christ, what are you doing, dude? You know, so who knows?
Who's on early edition tonight?
It's a good old boy network, Rich. It's like you having me on the show.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Except I'm a little more in touch than Tony La Russa.
You're a lot more in touch. Who's on early edition with you tonight, Gary?
Casey Smith is filling in for Trenny, who's in Iceland. I guess Iceland is a cool place to go.
It must be. She's like the third person I know that's gone to Iceland lately.
Jesus, I'm like, are you kidding me? You know what, people go to Iceland who have no kids and too much money. You know, oh, it's beautiful. The Northern Lights. I'm like, really? Okay. You know, yeah, so she's off, and then we get Tomasi coming in and Phil Perry coming in. So, you know, we'll talk some Celtics and also, you know, get into my thing with Brady is I've always felt that Garoppolo really motivated this guy. I mean, lit a fire underneath him. So hopefully that fire still continues.
Did you go trick-or-treating this week? Are you still taking the kids out when you can?
I did. New England Tailgate, I'm on that show with Fred and Steve. They went as me. They went as Gary Tanguay. That'll be at the end of the Tailgate show, which starts at 6 here on NBC Sports Boston. No, the kiddos did it. I had to work until 8 o'clock that night, and I did the pickup duty. I went to some of the neighborhoods and picked them up after the fact. But no costume for me this year. I just had a basketball player, a Hawaiian hippie, and a zombie cheerleader.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very nice. Now, do you go through the candy after they go to bed and grab what you like?
You know, I'm trying not to, man. I'm trying so hard not to. But, you know. I mean, that Jimmy Kimmel bit where, you know, they tell the kids that they ate all their candy. It's just great.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, just talk about parent revenge. I'm holding on. I'm doing okay. But, you know, a couple times at night, it's going to have one of those mini Snickers.
Sure, sure. Otherwise, you're a rock, I know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's me. made of granite.
No question about it. You're your main guy. That's what we're all made of up here. Granite and paper mill aroma.
Yeah, yeah, and fried dough.
Yes, oh, no question about that. Gary, always a pleasure. Thank you for making time for us this afternoon. We'll be watching tonight. The Arbella Early Edition gets underway at 6:30 on NBC Sports Boston. Did you have to get new blazers and everything for that?
No, no, that's not like Monday Night Football. We have the yellow blazer and the logo. No, 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 no. They just changed the signs in the building. That's it.
That's perfect.
No, no new blazer.
I'm going to get the old Telejournal News blazers that Gordon Manuel wore back in the day.
Back in the day. You wore that thing, too.
I did. The mustard yellow was a thing of beauty. It was made of 110% polyester.
Yeah. If hail, you know, hail happened to breathe on it, it would light on fire.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You would immolate right there on the spot. Gary, thank you, sir. We'll check in with you again very soon.
Richie, thanks for having me on.
It's Gary Tagway, NBC Sports Boston, here on the Best of Downtown. When we come back, Bryan Cranston returns to downtown for a second time, talks about his new movie, a big stage appearance coming up in London, and even plays a little Bryan Cranston trivia with us. It's just ahead on The Pulse, AM 620 WZOM.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Whatever you're looking for, G&M Family Market has got what you need. They're on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. They have fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, a Dunkin' Donuts right there, and an Amato's as well. And if there's something you can't find, just ask, and they'll make every effort to get it for you next time. It's G&M Family Market, Route 1A, Route 46 in Holden. They're open every day from 6 in the morning until 9 p.m.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo, sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at UMaineAlumniCard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
Polaris is now at Friend and Friend in Orono. Polaris side-by-sides, Polaris Rangers, Polaris Razors, Polaris ATVs, Polaris snowmobiles. The Polaris factory authorized clearance is going on now, with massive rebates up to $2,500 on non-currents, making now the time to buy. On-the-spot financing. Get your off-road vehicle today at Friend and Friend Polaris in Orono. Easy on, easy off. Exit 193 on I-95, just 5 minutes from Hogan Road. Polaris at Friend and Friend in Orono, now.
You know Green Acres Kennel Shop in Bangor is your pet's home away from home, but did you know they've been voted Bangor Region's best pet store for the 11th consecutive year? Green Acres carries a wide variety of pet food and supplies at competitive prices, along with a rewards program and frequent buyer programs. Their commitment to your pet's well-being is always number one. Learn more about Green Acres Kennel Shop at greenacreskennel.com or stop by and see them at 1653 Union Street in Bangor.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, a home away from home.
It's Best of Downtown here on your Sunday morning. Rich Kimble, Kerry Haskell on the Pulse, WZON.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were.
Our next guest, Bryan Cranston, has got a brand new movie that opened this weekend around the nation, along with Steve Carell, Lawrence Fishburne, and directed by Richard Linklater. It's called Last Flag Flying, and it deals with three Vietnam veterans rekindling their friendship, and looks like a terrific movie. We had a chance to talk with Bryan earlier this week about that and much more as he visited downtown for a second time. Thank you so much for being on with us. Again, it's your second time, which means we get to teach you the secret handshake.
Over the radio.
Yeah, but it'd be a little tricky, but we'll pull it off. By the way, sorry about your Dodgers last night.
Thanks for bringing that up, Rich. I was just about to make peace with it all, and now you poured a little salt in the wound. Sorry. Appreciate that.
It's a good way to start the conversation. Your movie, Last Flag Flying, opens at select theaters nationwide this weekend. Obviously, you'll take a look at the script, but is it easier to be persuaded to do something when you know that a guy like Richard Linklater is involved?
It sure is. You know, that's the joy of having some success in any line of work, but you get to work with some really great people. So the writing is better, the directing is better. I knew that Richard Linklater wrote this script and he was going to direct, and I love his work. And so I heard that Steve Carell and Lawrence Fishburne were thinking about it as well, but nobody had signed on yet. And we kind of all signed on at the same time. And it was just a joy. We bonded really strongly. And it's a sweet story. It's an earnest story. I think it's very honest. It's also very funny.
Let's talk about your character of Sal Neelan. Is it safe to say he's a guy who needs perhaps a lot of visceral experiences to process his experiences in Vietnam?
You know, I think what was so great about doing this film, and I talked to a lot of vets, certainly in my father's generation, the Great War, there weren't many people who wanted to talk about that. My father didn't really, my father-in-law didn't really. It was Vietnam vets who came back, and a lot of them were in PTSD and not necessarily recognizing it themselves. Some wanted to open up, some went into a cave. And in my case, in my character's case, Sal, he self-medicated because that's how he kept the pain and memories at bay. And I think it's very honest. Others suffer in different ways. So there's that. And yet there's also honor and nobility to the story and what transpires here, and a deep, deep rooted friendship.
Building on that friendship, Bryan, the camaraderie of the three of you, of these three characters, really came through in one clip I saw, buying the cell phones in the cell phone. It's a moment of lightness, but the camaraderie of the characters really came through. And there was a lot of improv. It felt like that was sort of an improv scene. And you've worked with Lawrence Fishburne in the past. Does that help when it comes to doing that sort of improvisational work?
Well, it does. You have to be comfortable with it. We were fortunate that we all got together in Los Angeles 3 weeks before we left for Pittsburgh to shoot the film. And that Last Flight Flying takes place in a bunch of different places in New Hampshire and Dover, Delaware. And it's kind of a road movie, but we shot it in Pittsburgh. But to have the advantage of getting in there and just reading it through and seeing what the other characters are thinking and feeling, and Rick would go and he would listen and he would go home and write and bring it back to the next day rehearsal, and we'd read new scenes and addendums to scenes or cut some scenes, and we just kind of shaped it. So it's as if in the acting world, it's as if someone brought in a big square piece of wet clay. And all of us are leaning into the table in the middle, and we're all making our mark. We're carving into the clay and trusting that our director will be able to guide us and say, yeah, I see what you're doing there. What about if you did that here? You know, and it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You know, so it's all about discovery and respect for how other people work. And then once you get those characters down, yeah, you're right. We did a lot of improvisation. But when you start with a great script and you have total trust in your director and your other actors, it just makes it so much easier just to be able to veer off and explore.
We're talking with Bryan Cranston. The film is Last Flag Flying. We had Ken Burns on the show a few months ago talking about his Vietnam War series that was on, and he thought one of the big lessons that we needed to learn from Vietnam was not to blame the warriors. Your characters are openly critical of the leadership and the decisions made, but also there's a great honor in doing a job, even if you disagree with it.
The military is a family. I just got back from a USO tour, and, you know, this younger generation has been maligned greatly, you know, accused of expecting a trophy if they just show up. But I got to tell you, Rich, these young men and women, young, either enlisted or officers, my wife and I were just so impressed. And every night after the full day of activities, we come home and we were just talking. And I met this person. I met this person. And there's such honor and courtesy and respect and a diligence and a determination to focus on their duty. So I came away going, we're in good shape. Let's not worry about the generation. Let's just try to leave them a better place than what we have now. And it's okay. When you're in that family, it's like your own personal family. You can criticize your mother or your father or your crazy cousin. And, oh, my God, they're coming over. I can't stand them. They have to go. But they're still family. And so I took it that way when I was talking to vets, is that they would complain. They would bitch and moan about commanding officers and stuff and some of what they thought were stupid details they had to do and the hours and the, you know, marching in the mud and the whole thing. But in the end of it, it's still their family. And if someone else came and criticized them, they would be the first to stand up and say, hey, you're out of line. So even in my character, Sal, who's crazy, he's addicted to alcohol and drugs, and he's such a massive consumer. He wants everything. He wants that helps him feel. If he's consuming, he eats candy, he smokes a cigar, he drinks, you know. So, but the good thing about Sal and where I found his nobility is that he is also the first to back up a friend. He will go with you to the end of the earth. And even though he's a little bit hard to be around for any length of time, and we all know family members like that, in the bottom line is he would be there for you in a second.
Bryan, the road trip is sort of the framework for this movie in a lot of ways. That's also something that you've done in your personal life. I saw an interview we did recently about your motorcycle trips on Route 66 and on the Lonely Highway.
Yeah.
And also it mentioned that your next one that you want to take is a sort of a Western National Park road trip.
Mm, yeah.
What's the appeal of being on a road trip for you on a personal level?
I think anytime that we get away from our surroundings, it helps. It helps restart you, I think. If you're in your own home, you go, oh, I've got to do this and I got to fix that. Oh, I've got to pick up that. I got to drop that off again. You can fill your day with endless amount of chores and things to do on your list to do for your house or your home or what you have to pick up. But when you're on the road, everything is new. So I did most of my touring on a motorcycle. And so it's like walking fast. You're kind of alone, but if you're riding with others, they're there with you as well. And you don't know what's on the other side of that ridge. And it could be sunrise, and you're wondering, what is the day going to bring? Where are we going to end up? What is the next town going to be like? So all those kind of questions always intrigue me, and they kind of excite me. I like actually putting myself in the position of the unknown. And I guess that's why I like acting so much, is because I don't know if it's going to work. No one really does know. I think Last Flag Flying works extremely well. But that's my opinion. And, I hope people go see it and embrace it for its story and sensibility.
Well, we're very excited about the movie, but I am also fascinated to hear a little bit about your theatrical experience that'll be coming up later this month on the National Theatre in London, as you bring the words of Paddy Chayefsky to life as the mad prophet of the airwaves, Howard Beale. How did this project come to you?
Well, they looked around and said, who is mad as hell and not going to take it anymore? His iconic line, I get to say, we're just about to open the previews right now. So we're in that sticky stage of progress where we're going through tech still, and you're wondering, you come off stage from a scene and I go, wait, what's next? I panic. What am I supposed to change into? Where am I supposed to go? It's that kind of sensibility right now, which is also kind of fun and alive. It keeps you on your toes. That's a little scary. I think it's a very important story. It's based on it follows it very closely. Lee Hall, our writer, was very sensible to not mess with Paddy Chayefsky's words, but just try to see how he can make the adaptation to the stage make sense. And it's beautiful. It's directed by Ivo van Hove, a wonderful director, and I'm having a great time. We open soon, and so if any of your listeners are coming over to London, come see me at the National Theatre for Network, and I'm there until the end of March.
Also, it was wonderful to see you back reunited with Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm. How much fun was that for you?
Well, I wrote it about it in my book. I wrote a memoir last year called A Life in Parts, and I wanted to put in all the different aspects, the parts that I play in real life and the parts that we all play in our personal life. And one of the sections of it is a couple experiences that I had on Seinfeld, and having the gift of being able to watch a master at work in Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. And for that matter, Julia and Jason and Richard, you know, they're so amazing to be able to watch and see how they craft a joke. And it's just, it was so much fun. So now on Curb Your Enthusiasm, he called and said, you want to be on the show? I said, when? That's the answer. When? Hopefully I'm not busy and I'm in Los Angeles and we could do this. And I got to play his therapist, which is so much fun. And all you know, there was one piece of information that I had to get out at some point, and there was one piece of information that he had to get out at some point. Other than that, all the scenes are improvisation. And you just go. And it was just a delight, and everyone on the show was so much fun. I can't wait for another opportunity. Hopefully they'll have me back.
I know people ask you all the time about Better Call Saul and whether Walter White might make an appearance on there. And I read a conversation you had recently where you said you'd be happy to do it as long as it's organic to the story.
I know Vince Gilligan so well, and Peter Gould, who are both co-creators of Better Call Saul, and were with, of course, Breaking Bad. And if they called and said, would you, I would do the same thing. Go, absolutely. How do you want to do this? Let's do it. But I know that they have such integrity to their show and their characters that they wouldn't do it as a stunt. It would have to have something germane to that story. And you know, even if it was just a slice of life, I think it would be great. I'd love to do it. I know Aaron Paul would love to do it too, to play Jesse on our show.
Well, Brian, it's your second time on the show, so you know, you feel like an old friend to us. Now, I wonder if you'd be willing to play a little game with us.
Okay.
You've created so many iconic roles through the years with Walter White, with Hal from Malcolm in the Middle, Dr. Tim Watley and Seinfeld, but people may not know you had a long, long career before those shows made you a huge success. And I wonder if we could throw out some characters and see if you could recall what show they were on.
Wow. You might just stump me. Oh, I would be surprised if I remembered.
All right, let's start with this one, because actually you talked about this show the last time you were on with us. Your character was Douglas Donovan.
Now, that show I know, because I played that character for 2 years on a daytime drama, a soap opera called Loving, back in the early 80s. With our friend John O'Hurley, yeah. He was my nemesis on the show. In fact, we married the same woman. One of your typical, at the same time, we were married to the same woman at the same time. And, of course, I didn't know it. Because good guys don't know it.
Right.
Bad guys know it. So, yeah.
All right. You're one for one. How about this one? Uncle Russell.
Okay. Uncle Russell was a character I played on a show for CBS called Raising Miranda. A beautiful show that I think was before its time. It was really sweet and funny, but it wasn't like a laugh riot. And I don't think the network really knew what to do with it at that time. But I enjoyed it.
You're on a roll here, two for two. How about Lieutenant Gordon Denton?
Lieutenant Gordon Denton. I guess he's a cop, or he could be in military, right?
Yeah, I would go with Gordon your first Denton. Instinct. I would go with cop.
A cop. Lieutenant Gordon Denton. I don't remember. What was that one?
That was Brooklyn South.
Oh, boy, that was a story. I put that in the book, too. That was one of my worst experiences as an actor. No wonder I blocked that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Now, you've played a lot of doctors through the years. This was just a one-time appearance as Dr. Harding Fletcher.
Dr. Harding Fletcher, probably on something like Murder, She Wrote.
Ooh, you're so close. You're right in the neighborhood with another TV icon.
I'll say maybe Matlock.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. There you go. All right, and the last one, very early.
You know, Rich, you got to have a bell.
I know. We should
have
a bell.
Ding, ding, it's winning. Yeah. Okay.
Or thunderous applause. Here's the last one. Do you remember playing Robert Hollis?
Robert Hollis.
Working with an Academy Award winner.
Was Robert Hollis my character on a show called Airwolf?
Yes. Wow. That's impressive. That's 4 out of 5 with about 150 IMD listings. Well done, sir.
Wow. Well, that was a very important show for me to do because I met my future wife on that show.
Well, there you go.
That was like 31 years ago or so. 31, 32 years. Wow.
Well, that's incredible.
Time flies.
Now, you were, we sent this out to your people to let them know. It's not up there with Emmy Awards or Tony Awards, certainly, but you were voted by our listeners. A couple of 100,000 votes came in to pick our favorite guest of last year, and you won this Downtown Madness. You took the crown away from John O'Hurley, who had won the previous year.
Oh, boy. That's fantastic. Anytime I could defeat that man, I shall take it. Well, that's fun. What do I win?
Admiration, respect. Maybe a T-shirt. I don't know.
Okay. Next time I happen to be in Maine, how about we all gather? We'll have a gathering with all your listeners, and we'll do something, and we'll have a little party and say hello to everybody. And I'll pick up my trophy then.
That sounds fantastic. Brian, thank you so much. We appreciate you making time for us this afternoon. Wish you well with Network. Wish I could get over there and see it. It sounds amazing and can't wait to see the movie.
Terrific. Thanks so much, guys.
Big fun there with Brian Cranston. The film is called Last Flag Flying. And look forward to seeing that in theaters around here, hopefully before too long. And Network getting ready to debut in London later on this month. That's going to wrap it up here for the Best of Downtown. On your Sunday morning, thank you to Brian Cranston, to Gary Tangway, to Bill Green, and of course to you for making us a part of your weekend. Got a great week of shows ahead. We mentioned Monday on the program, Stephen Tobolowsky. Author Joy Jordan-Lake will discuss her new book, A Tangled Mercy. Plus Maine Black Bear football coach Joe Harris-Simiak. Alan Adams of the Maine Edge with movie reviews. Also later in the week, Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits will pay us a visit, and much more planned for you in the days ahead. Hope the rest of your weekend goes well. Thank you for joining us. Stick around for Casey Kasem, American Top 40, the 80s. Next, right here on The Pulse, AM 620 WZON. You're gonna be all right now.